Phoenix Down Radio is on the air. With your hosts, Klaus Nightbringer, Sarah Timono, Chili, and Luna Vaughn.
Welcome, everybody, to Phoenix Down Radio, episode number 43. How is everybody doing today? Oh, my God, what happened? Sarah?
Dun, dun, dun.
Sarah, what did you do?
I don't know what you're talking about.
The pile of bodies on the table?
Don't tell me what to do with my weekends.
There was one too many daddy jokes that were said.
And we killed the Luna.
I couldn't handle it anymore, and I had to take someone down with me.
I mean, that's what you do. Otherwise, it's just like,
yeah,
oh,
I can't
here's
go alone.
Nobody.
God.
But it's like, hey, here's someone who's cool enough that other people died for them, or she was able to lure in people and kill them. Either way, you've got some status in the morgue.
Woohoo!
I wasn't thinking about this before I started talking. That's like my family motto. Anyways.
So, how's everybody been the last couple of weeks?
You never see that.
Oh, God. There he goes. He's singing.
Hey, I finished Persona 5. I have time for other things now.
Wow. You finished it. That's pretty good.
Well, I mean, I guess there's New Game Plus.
Well, I suppose you need to do that in order to get all the things, right?
Mm-hmm. Unless you have platinumed the game, you don't actually like it. Anyone who actually says that sort of thing is a terrible person. You shouldn't listen to them.
So definitely listen to them? Because we go against what you say?
Okay, I am trying not to set up an accidental logic bomb. Just one day. One day without breaking the AI.
How did Bulu find my house?
He stalks you.
Apparently.
That's unsettling.
A little bit. So, welcome to Phoenix Down Radio, everybody. If you're new here, thank you. Thank you for joining us live at twitch.tv/Phoenix Down Radio. If you're listening to us on the podcast, like I said, come check us out live sometime. It's every other Saturday night on our Twitch channel. And guys, we are now Twitch affiliates. So huzzah, we made it.
I still don't actually know what that means.
Well, I'll kind of go over that here in a second. So May 1st, right after the last show, we actually got the email inviting us to the Twitch affiliate program. So, you know, Luna and I have been doing a lot of streaming since then to thank everybody for their love and support, for the show and the channel. So thank you so much. We do really appreciate all of that. But getting to what does it mean for us? It means now we stream exclusively live to Twitch. I'm not doing any of the streaming to YouTube anymore. So we are a Twitch streamer exclusively. We will still be uploading our videos to YouTube, but it will be a day later. They do get 24-hour video exclusivity on Twitch. Basically, we're their bitches, I guess.
Do we still say Twitch affiliates if we start describing ourselves as Twitch's bitches? Oh man, that rhymes. I love that.
Oh, no.
The other thing that it means is you can now cheer for us. You can use...
What does cheering mean, Klaus?
I thought they could, like, always cheer for us.
No, actually. Well, cheering is, you know, they could be like, woohoo, you guys rock. But cheering is actually something you can do using Twitch's currency called bits. It's basically a way to say thank you to the streamer for their appreciation of what they're doing. So,
and if we save up enough of those bits, we can take them over to the arcade counter and trade them in for some slap bracelets.
I was going to say bytes and then megabytes. And never mind.
Or we could get cool slap bracelets and be the talk of the elementary school playground.
So cool story. One time I went to an arcade and I was playing air hockey. Well, my finger was out of the protection, circle of protection, basically. And literally the puck came towards me and sliced open the side of my hand.
Oh,
yeah.
Lovely.
keep your fingers in the circle of protection, people.
I thought you said this was a cool story.
No, that's a cool story.
Oh, Nick Gnar, thank you so much for that cheer.
Thank you, Nick
Gnar. Oh, man. That's a very nice cheer, guys. Thank you so much. That's what it is. And, of course, Chili is not going to be topped. He's going to do it, too. Thank you, guys. We really do
rivalry.
Yep. You can actually... Lil Kizzle in the chat's asking, how do you get bits? Below the stream, actually in the chat window, you will see a little kind of triangular pyramid gem-shaped thing that you can click on, and that will allow you to get bits. You can either purchase them from Twitch. They take a bit of a cut ahead of time. So if you wanted to buy, say, 100 bits, I think it costs like $1.40 or something like that. Or you can get them for free by watching ads. So if you want to get a few that way, you can do that too. So,
oh man, we are totally worth watching a few ads for.
Oh yeah.
We're not going to push the ads on you though. I mean, like I said, anything that, that shows up is sent by Twitch. We're not pushing ads, but yeah, it's a really cool thing. We appreciate it. It's just a thank you to us, and we thank you guys for coming by, checking us out and enjoying the stuff. So yeah, that's that.
Anyways.
What else have you guys been up to since the last show?
What have I been up to? I'm on the dreaded Umbrite stage of my second relic.
Yeah.
I hate everything, especially lore. Yep. Lore is a bitch.
Sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
I am still on the light stage of my first one. I just have had zero enthusiasm for actually doing that.
Well, because a lot of people, when they were doing it, when it was, you know, brand new, everybody was spamming A1S, because mm-hmm. that seemed to be the fastest way to do it. If you got a good team, you could get in and out of there in about 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, and then just do it over and over again for like six or eight hours.
And boom, you got a shiny relic. But yeah. I think that you should just enjoy it, you know, do it as you are doing content, you know, don't force it. It's what keeps people sane, you know, by not forcing the content.
I feel
so much,
like
so.
The word sane needs some qualification here.
Yeah.
Or suffering from burnout or, you know, loathing of the game.
Yeah, like, I mean, it keeps them sane, but not like actually sane, like sane in a relative sense.
Yeah,
you're going to be shivering a little bit, but you're not making skin suits out of anyone.
Yet.
I do not want that to be a relic stage. Do not give them ideas.
Relic quest, find your closest friend. And lure them in. Tell them to rub the lotion on their skin.
No, I was just figuring, like, this little bar pops up above a bunch of NPCs in Idleshire.
Choose your victim.
It's like the Manderville quests, except even more wide-scarring.
It's the Manderville quest, but you hate everyone, and thus, at the very end, you have to pick which one.
I mean, those quests even have you rubbing lotions on people's skin. I think they even reference that on one of the key items.
Yeah.
This took a really dark turn. I think we should move on.
You're welcome.
Welcome
to Phoenix Sound Radio.
Klaus did get a car finally.
Oh, finally.
Awesome. Yes.
Another O2 piece of crap. But hey, it runs. It does good. And I decorated it accordingly.
You have a like 1 or 2 ton piece of metal and plastic and glass with which you can end lives. That is power there.
And put stickers on.
That too.
Yes.
The stickers are very important.
They are.
Stickers that copy a certain person's
there's
van.
There's more than just a Luna Vox that has the Dalamud icon on their vehicle,
no.
I'm sure.
Only me.
As
you
long as
off.
You're not doing one of those Peeing Calvin stickers, those always just ticked me off.
No, unless I'm going to do that stick logo. Family.
Yeah, I think you should do the Calvin peeing on the WoW logo. That would be funny.
Though Calvin wouldn't have, like, I'm pretty sure that actually like actively ticks off Bill Watterson, and he's a nice guy. You shouldn't tick him off.
Yeah, I may end up putting the Stormblood sticker from my collector's edition on my car. Probably not, but it's something you can do with it.
Something.
But no, I also then got this. My other ride is a Chocobo sticker, so it's cute.
I wanted to get that one, but Husbando kind of put the ban hammer on that. He's like, "You already got your sticker."
Did you get yours on Etsy, Luna?
On Etsy? No, yeah. I got mine on Amazon.
Oh, see, I ordered mine from Etsy from Vendable Vinyl.
So how much did you pay for it?
With shipping, it was under $15.
I got mine for like $7. You got ripped.
No, it was because it was only $8 for the items. The shipping was what sucked. But you know what? I figure I'm going to support a smaller group through Etsy.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You say that now, but you're just trying to make excuses of... Yeah.
But you, no, you said you got the one sticker for $7?
Yeah.
I got two of them for $15.
Well, good.
So, there.
You. I love you guys, but this is kind of terrible radio.
Yeah.
I don't know. Lil Kizzle's kind of liking it. They want to go to Amazon to get the Chocobo sticker now. So, you're welcome.
So. Just because the audience likes it doesn't mean it's good. What do they know?
Oh, Jesus. Anyways, yeah. Moving on. Gaming community news.
Game and community news. We're going to start with a little bit of Final Fantasy 15 news. There's another new set of time-limited challenges now available in Final Fantasy 15. This new challenge pits players against the clock to score the fastest kills against a new set of hunts. This hunt pits you against 4 high-level monsters, and your time determines your quest point reward.
And then you trade in quest points for awesome stuff?
Some or what they think is supposed to be awesome stuff. I'm not liking the way they're doing these things, guys. Final Fantasy 15 is a single player role playing game, and the fact that they're treating it with these quests like it's an MMO or online game, it's not. And I'm sorry, you need to stop it.
A lot of games do that, though. That's something that's fairly normal for a lot of games, even if they're not MMOs.
Like I said, if it was an online, you know, not an MMO, but an online role-playing game, I could somewhat understand that. But this is a single-player game. You know, the storyline doesn't rely on, you know, needing online content. So I don't understand why they're insisting on these time-limited events to get people in there. And it's not that interesting. I mean, the last one the DJ guy, Afrojack, that wasn't that interesting either.
Is that one over? I never did get that sword.
I think it's over.
I don't feel that bad about this.
But, yes, I don't know. Like I said, so, I mean, it's one of those things that I'm going to end up not doing because I guess I'm not incentivized enough to do it, or the fact that they're just limiting it to too small of a time frame, and there's just too many other things that I need to do.
Yeah, there's like a lot of stuff competing for attention. And at this point, I'd kind of like it if something was like, we're going to have this there, but get to it when you can. Like,
my point.
Don't add to the problem.
Yeah, put it in there and allow people to experience the content, but maybe not necessarily, you know, take it away after, you know, so much time. Maybe take away some of the prizes, but allow people to go in there and do it for a period, you know, for as long as they have the game. Just patch it in. You don't need to take it away, guys. Come on.
I wonder if they will, like, patch it to make all the limited time stuff full-time available, like, much later on.
Well, I guess we'll have to see what the popularity of these different items are and these different events that they're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Continuing on with gaming community news, there is a new NA contest, the Heaven's Dub contest, which the three of us have to work on our script as well as what we're going to do.
Oh, dear.
Did you ever finish Hildebrand?
I just finished it yesterday. Or no, cool. Today. So yes, I did finish it. And cool. I was looking at that as a possibility. I would love to try and voice Hildy. That would be hilarious.
Oh my lord.
I don't know why.
But I'm going to voice Hildy.
My brain just started demanding that Heaven's Dub steps should be a thing.
Boom. Do. No.
Someone stop him.
So... anyway, what this contest allows you to do is dub over your favorite scene from 3.0 to 3.55. No 3.56, guys. With by yourself or with up to two other friends. So you can have, so like Sarah, Luna, and I can be part of one entry. But unfortunately, Chili couldn't join us because he's A, not in NA, and B, a fourth person.
Yeah. Also, like the British accent would totally break mimesis.
Or something like that. And there's two different categories you can enter. There's the serious entry and the comedic entry. Serious, you have to read the script verbatim as it is in the game.
Comedic Great opportunity entry, to show off your acting chops, though.
Yep. And the comedic one is a no holds barred, well, within reason, I guess. You can create your own script. You can take a serious scene and you can totally turn it on its head.
The comedic script you do probably should follow vaguely what's happening in the actual scene, though.
Well, it
also,
depends on how
do not use this at.
Go ahead, finish.
Do not use this as a platform for your erotic YoshiP fanfic. No
Damn
one
it.
Wants to hear that.
Well, that it would disqualify you.
I mean, probably lots of people want to hear that, but still.
Not the people at Square Enix.
Send us your erotic YoshiP fanfic, everyone.
Yeah, podcast at phoenixonradio.com.
This is going to be the best opportunity to show off my Emmerich and Harshafont, like, yaoi fanfic. So,
no.
Yes. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's got to be able to be, it's got to be family friendly, Luna.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. Otherwise, we're going to get disqualified, and we're not going to get the pretty things. Speaking of pretty things,
we're doing this for the art.
I want the loot.
Understands
you know?
My art.
I want the loot. The top three are going to be able to actually get some physical stuff, guys.
Yeah, they've been giving out some fairly nice prices lately,
as well as a number of people who are going to get their option of a in-game item like the Noble Barding, Scarf of Wondrous Wit, Bluebird Earrings, yada, yada, yada.
Nicknar has the perfect title for our YoshiP yaoi fanfic.
50 Shades of Please Look Forward to It.
Exactly.
Oh, my. Anyway, players have from now until May 26th at 7 p.m. Pacific time to upload your video and post it to the proper contest thread. Details are out on the Lodestone. So we need to figure out what we're going to do. Listeners on live and on the podcast, go figure out what you want to do. You get one entry per side. You can enter one comedic and one serious if you want, but only one entry per type.
I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, God, yes. So, hope you guys have something to do Monday and Tuesday, because it won't be Final Fantasy 14. The NA data center relocation happens Monday and Tuesday. 48 hours of downtime. What are you going to do with your life?
Probably clean my house.
Like I was doing anything significant with my life before this.
You know, if you hadn't pushed all the way through Persona, you could have been maybe playing that. Or maybe it'll be your excuse to start your new game plus.
Yeah, I ended up...
Damn it, Chili.
Just in time I ordered something for that Amazon deal, and so I've got a new visual novel to play through.
Damn it, Chili.
Involving murders at a school. It's kind of cool.
Chili said FAP.
God damn it, Chili.
See?
God, Chili. What do you do during the refractory periods?
FAP.
Do you not understand the concept of a refractory period? Because I will explain it to you in great and loving detail.
Chili is just that gifted.
I kind of want to know, but I kind of don't.
Chili needs Jesus.
I mean, if that's
lube.
What gets you off, I guess.
He needs
Wait, what?
Moving on.
This just got awkward.
Has they said anything about where they're putting those servers?
No. somewhere other than Quebec?
Eh.
They have not. They have not disclosed where the servers are going to be located. Maybe they will at the next Letter for the Producer Live, which airs on Monday, May 22nd at 9 a.m. Pacific time. Maybe we'll learn about it there.
That's actually a reasonable time.
Yep, we'll all be at work, cool. But I think I'm work that day. Yeah, I do work that day. Damn it, I work.
Damn.
I do have that day off.
Notes.
All right. So anyway, Yoshi and the dev team will be live at an event in Germany, and we have somebody standing in the way. Hello, person standing in the way.
Damn it, Merc.
he's going to talk about the Stormblood job changes, more info on the Red Maiden Samurai, and give us more hype as we get so much closer to Alamigo and Doma.
Oh, Klaus, you have a little friend sitting on your lap. It's so cute.
For about a
he's
split second.
He's kind of hyper.
yeah. I mean, he's like,
he doesn't want to be your friend anymore, I guess.
Rude.
Right? Rude.
So I'm actually excited to hear what we get in this next live letter. There'll be a lot of interesting stuff coming out of that, so please look forward to it. Anything else you guys want to talk about with that?
I really have no idea what to expect. Like, even trying to make predictions on this just feels kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, just... I feel so much less enthused than I thought I would be. I'm hoping to hear something good, but at this point, it kind of just feels like, okay, play out the time until the expansion actually comes out.
That guy just can't sit in a chair, can he?
No, Merc is having issues right now.
Your mom is having issues.
Well, yeah, actually she is. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for noticing. God.
Gah.
So, I don't know if you guys saw the news, but there are new 30th anniversary plushies available for pre-order now. Did you guys see those?
I saw you post one. And I have the same opinion kind of as you do on them.
It didn't stop me from ordering them, though.
You're such an SE slut.
No, I am such an SE plushie slut. Get it right.
I'm not sure that's better.
No, it's not better.
Sure it is.
No, it's not.
Means
plushie means something.
But you gotta admit, the little chocobo is adorable in the Warrior of Light getup.
Yes, but in this context, plushie means something very different than what you think it means. I'll send you something later.
No. No.
Little good. I didn't want to actually find those.
Good.
Little Kizzle in the stream is asking if they come with codes.
I doubt it because these are not Final Fantasy 14 specific. These are Final Fantasy 30th anniversary gear. So I don't think there's going to be anything for 14. All right, we'll just call you Mamo. Or Mimo.
Oh, that's my little spoony partner right here.
Ah, gotcha. So... But I mean, like I said, I just like the look of the chocobo. The Moogle. Mamo. Sorry.
Mamo!
I mean, cute stuff is good. I approve of cute stuff.
The Moogle, Flatus replied back to me saying, it's limited edition. It's a Moogle. You'll get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it is, you only get the 30th anniversary once, so...
But that's true. Like, you only get the 29 and 3/4 anniversary once.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's never going to come back again.
But, like I said, I'll get it. It's cute. It's
okay. I think that really is the strongest argument. Cute things are awesome.
Yes. Speaking of other things from the Square Enix store, there are rumors swirling about that there's going to be made available a limited number of physical collector's editions for Steam players.
I think that's actually a really nice move on their part, like recognizing that there are people who are attached to this platform that they can't move away from it very easily and being like, hey, we want you to get some nice stuff too. That was actually really nice of them.
I agree, and I think that's really cool. They have not announced when they go on sale yet. I would assume they're going to be through the Square Enix store only. They're going to cost $200 just like everything else, but then their code is going to be tied to Steam, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a large number of Steam players out there. So, I mean, the fact
One of them.
Yep.
I am one of them.
I believe Pete and Avi are both Steam players as well. But yeah, our Luna is a Steam player. So, So yeah, that would be really cool when it will come out. So if you're really interested in that, you're not having to spend, you know, the $200 plus another $60 to get Stormblood.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I don't know if I'm going to go for it, but it's cool.
Yes, the idea is very nice. Another idea that would be very nice is to get this particular symphony concert available in NA. The Eorzean Symphony will be performed at the Tokyo International Forum Hall A by the Tokyo Philharmonic Orchestra. A number of Final Fantasy XIV themes will be played during the three performances, September 23rd and 24th of this year. And like I said, Soken hinted that if there's enough interest, they may bring it over to NA. So guys, tell them we want it.
Yeah.
We want all the things. The music is beautiful. We got to have it. Because, I mean, you guys have heard, you know, what they can do at, you know, FanFest. Mm-hmm. As well as Luna and I have heard A New World. Sarah has been to A Distant Worlds. The music.
I feel like I went to at least a couple others. There was one right when I graduated college. What was that?
I mean, the more we can get the live performances of this beautiful music, I think the more it will be, you know, more people will be able to enjoy it as well. Not it just a video game niche market, but, you know, people in general, because it is just beautiful music.
And, you know, sometimes it's just kind of fun to get out for a bit and go to like a fancy event.
Yes. So, yeah, that's what we've got in the game for now. Now, I know we're a little bit late on discussing this because we're about a little over a month away from Stormblood. But one thing that we have not yet talked about on the show is the story recap from 3.56 and Heavensward.
Oh, we never. Yeah, like everyone's doing a spoiler cast. We have to do a spoiler cast. Anyone who's dodged it this far gets their life ruined now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and we weren't dodging it per se to avoid it. It's just there was a lot of other things that we wanted to talk about that
lot of things just kept coming up.
Giggity. I mean,
God damn it.
So
Klaus, you're fired.
You can't fire me. We won't have a show.
You're fired.
Good night, folks.
Yeah, I gotta back Luna up on this. I mean, there's part of me that objects to this just because, like, you should have been watching the cutscenes and actually reading what they say and having a different voice for each character.
Oh, my God.
It's like you knew that that contest was coming up, huh?
Exactly.
I don't think you want my job. I don't think you want this job.
You don't want his job. You have to deal with so much shit.
Yeah,
mostly
like
from
Sarah.
Me and Luna.
Well, he's dealt with me plenty.
Yeah, it's when you add in the Sarah.
Yeah, you
really
have to
bad.
Deal with Sarah.
I censor myself significantly on this stream. You don't want to have to hear what Klaus deals with.
Oh.
The random show tunes. All the random show tunes.
Hey, some of them are video game tunes.
But they're very random. Point still stands.
Dun, dun, I can't dun, argue with that
bit.
Anyway,
so. Luna.
What?
Hi.
I want to ride my chocobo all day.
So I wrote down everything that I could remember from memory. If I screw it up really badly, I know Sarah will come up and chastise me and make fun of me and then fix it. But I figured that would make for interesting
radio. Yeah, pretty much.
And I think that's why he left it as is, because he's going to come up and surprise me. Like, no, it did not happen that way, blah, 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 blah.
I kind of just, okay, Klaus, can I take this over and just kind of read what you exactly wrote, like at least the first paragraph.
I read it. I wrote it that way specifically. Yes.
So. I know, but
make
can I please
happen.
Read it?
Sure.
So the people at home understand your creative process. Because
dear.
Reading through this just kind of made me giggle.
That was the point.
I know. Okay.
Take it away, Luna.
Okay. This is verbatim Klaus's explanation of what happened in the latest patch. So, the giant cocoon created by Papalimo is about to give way to a prime of unknown power. What do we do? The Aorzean Alliance calls a meeting, and our old buddy Nero crashes the party to suggest what we've all been thinking the whole time. Let's dig up Omega! Wait, what? Yes, he's serious. Omega is hiding. What the hell, Siri?
Omega. Is Siri helping you find Omega?
Apparently, Siri thinks I'm talking to her.
I didn't write the Siri part.
No, no, he didn't. Siri just popped up and she's like, what do you want?
It's kind of hilarious. Okay. If you had.
Anyways, Omega is hiding in Cartano Flats, like we all knew. So we go take a look, and we're stopped by an odd looking Darlayan Rogadin who tries to stop us, but we're the Warrior of Light. And he ends up running away like a bitch.
Okay, important correction there.
No, shut up, sir. No, I
am jumping in here because this is important. It is not just that we're the Warrior of the Light. It is that we get to drive Nero's Magitech armor, and it is fucking amazing.
Okay.
Like, I cannot leave that unchallenged. That was a really awesome set piece.
Okay, going on. So just as the Garlands run with their tails between their legs, Nero teleports into Omega's control room, and we go in after him. After pushing a bunch of buttons and turning some knobs, we wake up Omega and send him after emerging peril, just in the nick of time, too.
Well, I also like that.
Also, I object to that parenthetical. Yes, we knew that Omega was in the Cartano Flats because we were all paying attention to the bit where Taleji Adeleji is interested in digging him up, and we have the PvP games going on there because people are interested in the Allegan ruins at the Cartano that were exposed by the descending fragments of Dalamud. Yes, we all knew that.
We learned so much.
Yes. Well, I mean, I suppose everybody who didn't do PvP maybe didn't know that, or those.
I barely did PvP, but I paid attention to the quest to unlock it.
Yep. Oh my lord!
Or the people who were cutscene skippers, you know, they might not have known all that, but we all know.
We don't acknowledge them.
All right, can I continue now?
No,
yeah, sure. I don't care either way.
Okay, Luna, fine.
What, do I get to continue then?
Go ahead.
Yay, I get to talk. The warrior lion and the scions rush to East Shroud, where they watch Shinryu... Correct pronunciation? Yes, no?
Yes, good.
...emerges from the blue orb. He's about to start wrecking shit, but Omega finds his prey, and an epic chase scenes... Okay, I can't keep it up.
And an epic chase scene ensues. Omega and Shinryu are equal to each other, and in the end, it's a double KO, with Shinryu flying off to the east and Omega sailing off to the west.
I mean, technically, they both went off to the east from where we are.
Yeah, but...
Well, I think?
I don't know.
But just, like... I'm guessing that, like, one of them's going to land in the, like, Doma area, and one of them's going to be in the Alamigo area.
That's
like,
my guess as well.
Between the two.
That's what I'm guessing too. And that's what people are speculating. That's why I wrote it as such. It just sounded better to write it that way.
But yeah, they did not give us a handy compass overlay during that bit, so no. I am not quite sure where stuff ended up.
No, that was I wrote that with using a little bit of dramatic flair, okay? We could have been backwards for all I know, and they could have gone the other ways. They could have gone north and south. They could have gone, I don't know, but
it turns out that both of them landed on the Sultan Anonymous dinner table. She was very cross about this as it upset the crumpets.
No, one of them went to the moon. And that's where we're going in 5.0.
Oh my god.
To find the Daddy of Light.
I was...
That's for taking my reading.
What? You can't see everything.
I know. But I spent a lot of time writing that out. Anyway... At this time, we notice the Charlayan tattoo disappear from Ida's neck. It's then we learn that truth, Ida isn't Ida. She's actually Lise, Ida's younger sister who took her place when she disappeared during a raid many years ago during a resistance raid. That was poorly written. And Papalima was hiding her secret all these years, helping to keep her safe.
That bit was a little bittersweet. I mean, like, seeing that and realizing who it was, but there was also like, this is a confirmation that Papalimo really is gone now.
Yeah. So
I'm going to miss that little potato.
Well, he's now mashed.
Wow. Well, really? I would think he's like boiled.
Or maybe he's flash fried.
Yeah, that too.
Served with a side of sriracha dipping sauce.
Oh my god, I'm hungry now. I'm hungry again.
While all this was happening, we were introduced to a very odd Rogadin from the Far East with a very interesting sense of duty. He rode from Doma all the way to Vesper Bay, and no sooner did he step foot ashore, he passes out from hunger. Nursed back to health, he's brought to the Scions and introduced to us as Gosetsu, an associate of Yugiri, and we learn they both served under the same lord in Doma during the occupation and resistance. Gosetsu doesn't quite trust the Scions or the Warrior of Light, but Yugiri insists that they need to figure out what's going on here and try to put some closure to this chapter before going back to Doma to resume the fight against the Empire. After the Shinryu Omega battle, we are able to earn Gosetsu's trust and he becomes our ally as well.
I really, really like Gosetsu. Like, I'm seriously hoping that somehow they kind of do like a side quest that involves him that becomes like the new Hildebrand.
Or maybe that's he just gets involved with Hildebrand?
Oh my god.
I'm not quite sure how you mean that. I mean, I'm sure the art of that already exists. It is the internet.
I didn't mean that way.
Too late. The internet has already heard and responded.
Anyway. Sorry, I just, yeah.
They don't know House I is did just like, that.
What? 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 Did you mute us?
No, I didn't mute you.
Did you mute Sarah?
No, I didn't mute anybody. I played a little bit of the Hildebrand intro on that. So.
Oh my god.
Anyway, yeah, Gosetsu is an interesting fellow. I'm not sure how I feel about him quite yet.
I'm sure he's going to be rather irritated if at the fact that we're going to be rushing off to Alamigo for some stuff. That is one of the things thinking about it, I think, is going to be the most challenging about the whole war on two fronts, is each of the fronts is going to feel like, why are you spending time on that one? Ours is the important one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like I said, we'll have to see how they end up balancing the interplay between the two locales.
I think that'll be interesting, like, in terms of story type stuff, it's like, no, hey, that's actually kind of cool dynamic. I'm saying for our characters, that's going to be a difficulty that we face.
Yeah.
Mm, definitely. You know, story-wise, we're probably going to end up, you know, getting to such a point where it feels like it's, you know, time to move over to the next area and then maybe go back and forth that way. Not necessarily just, you know, warp back and forth willy-nilly.
Right.
I hope.
But I mean, even then, I could see, like, if I was someone leading the Alamegan resistance, I would be like, we've got good momentum. We've accomplished something major. Why are you leaving to go to this other one? We need you here.
Because they called me on my Link Pearl and they told me to go meet them at the Waking Sands.
I don't feel like our allies are going to be terribly happy with that.
Yeah.
Well, at least it won't be Menphilia calling us, right?
And suddenly.
Or... we don't
know.
And
then Menphilia reappears with the divine Eidolon Link Pearl.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Now she can call everybody at once.
With which she can not only call you, but actually involuntarily summon you. You'll just be like in the middle of a dungeon, and all of a sudden this little random chance thing will happen, and you'll be teleported away to Menphilia.
Where she'll ask you to go get lunch. Because she can't be bothered to go up and get it herself.
Well, yeah. She totes wants to get lunch with you. Besties.
No, she just wants you to get her lunch so she doesn't have to get up from her desk.
And then she's like, go away now.
And you can go now.
Go away.
No. Then she just unceremoniously sends you away.
No, I actually like the idea better of Menphilia wanting to be besties with us. It's like, God, Menphilia, I'm trying to take care of this war here. And she's like, let's go get Frogurt. And you'll be like, okay.
But the Frogurt is cursed?
Let's
go. Oh, God. Sometimes I am not making that Simpsons reference.
I hate everything. I hate it. I'm done. I'm going to drink this. I'm going to chug the rest of my alcohol just so I can.
That is a legitimate reaction to this situation.
Uh-huh.
That is a wonderful back tattoo that person has. I hope they move shortly. So.
You are positioned right in front of the camera, Silver Wind.
Yes. Hi.
Oh, now you're facing the camera. Awesome.
The joys of running a live show, right?
Yep.
While playing a game. It's all good. So, what did you guys think of the wrap-up of the Heavensward storyline?
It definitely, for me, I'm feeling hype going into Stormblood.
I do wish they hadn't split it into two patches. So, like, having that all as a single sequence of events, I think would have been a little more interesting.
I don't know. I feel like they had to leave some type of cliffhanger. Otherwise, we'd have, 3 months of nothing?
That's fair.
Well, look at the cliffhanger we got going in from 2.0 to 3.0. I mean, that was huge. Everybody was gone. We lost everything. We didn't know what was going to happen.
We were wanted.
Yes. We were escaping justice, or so they thought. And so, that was a pretty big cliffhanger right there. We didn't know what the Warrior of Light's future held for him. But going into Stormblood, you know, we have an idea of what's going on. You know, we have a direction. We know enough where I don't feel it's as big a cliffhanger as we had in 2.55.
Yeah, definitely feels like a bit less of one.
Yeah. Yeah, I can agree with that.
But, I mean, don't get me wrong. The storyline we're going to get is going to be amazing. But like I said, it just, there's not as much, you know, hype for it, you know, the way that built natively into the story. The hype that we're getting is generated outside. You know, it's generated by the events, it's generated by the live letters, it's generated by the community. But the game itself, I don't think, has done as good of a job doing it as the transition from 2.55 to 3.0.
I mean, how well did people react to the way that the 2.0, 3.0 did it? I feel like a lot of people were like actively upset at the, oh, hey, we just had all this really terrible stuff happen to us.
I think what upset them the most was the retconning. Basically, the saying, oh, no, never mind. You're fine. It's all good. You know, the fact how they turned it 180 so easily. Nanemo didn't die, and that you were exonerated, you know, basically totally, and all of that stuff, you know, so easily versus, you know, having to work really hard to earn trust back and things like that. It just seemed like it was handed fast.
I wonder if there's like, because of that, just this expectation, it's like, oh, Papalimo's probably not dead either. If there are people who are feeling that way.
I think some people are feeling that a little bit. Honestly, you know, I'm not, you know, saying that he's 100% dead. We haven't seen a body. I haven't seen a package of French fries.
Oh my god.
Sorry.
The potato jokes will never end.
Nope.
Doesn't seem like it.
Never. Well, maybe we'll slow him down since Chili's not here to defend himself, but
oh my lord. Chili, we need you.
But I mean, with that said, Like I said, I'm looking forward to what we're going to be doing. But like I said, the game itself doesn't seem to be pushing the hype train as fast as it could be going. My thoughts on it, that's all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's hard to push the hype train without either doing that stuff that then becomes a, hey, they went back on it, or making some like super irreversible changes to the world.
Well, I mean, they did those super irreversible changes to the world. What was that, about 4 years ago? Five years ago?
Yeah, but there was reason for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
there was good reason for that.
There can always be reason for, well, I mean, WoW did it too.
Special circumstances.
WoW did it too. So, I mean, it's not like it's unprecedented.
Yeah.
Though doing it for the second time in the same game, that might be pushing it a little bit too much, but as far as that dramatic of an instance, so I don't know. Any other thoughts that you guys want to talk about?
Part of me wants to go back and look at a lot of the scenes with how Papalimo and Ida interact, just knowing that, because it's kind of talked this thing where like they didn't openly acknowledge it, but Ida could tell that that they knew about it. I kind of want to go back and look at some of those interactions in that light, see how it kind of changes the tenor of it.
Oh, with the hindsight being 2020 and all?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying
to remember. My general experience has been that they do, to some degree, like, have this planned out reasonably in advance. It wasn't something that they just decided at the last moment, oh, hey, we're going to have it be the case that it's actually leased. That this was probably planned and coming for a long time. And so they often have those little hints.
I suppose it does explain how he has been kind of a little bit overbearing when it comes to, you know, her making a mistake or something like that. He's just being overly protective, I suppose.
Yeah. Or impatient with the whole thing where she's like, I'm going to be a little bit goofy now. And he put up with rather a lot.
Yeah, he did.
And it kind of makes a little more sense of why he might have been. Which actually makes it kind of sweet.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, it would be interesting to go back and watch those games. Like I said, I mean, I remember, you know, because I went through the started in Gridania. So I dealt with those two as my first Scions. So having to interact with them, you know, as basically a green leaf, that was, you know, interesting way to get introduced to the Scions of the Seventh Dawn, I would say. But it might make a little bit more sense as to how they were acting, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose the big elephant in the room, so to speak, the giant dragon in the corner, is where the hell did Shinryu come from?
Right? Maybe Sarah can shed some light on that.
All right, so we're going into lore time, are we?
Yes, I think we're basically we're done with the
That was my smooth ass segue, my segue into lore, and Senpai didn't notice.
So yeah, Shinryu. I mean, so first off, just in terms of real world mythology, Shinryu does come from Chinese dragons. It's the Japanese name for the Chinese Shenlong or Shenlung. I am totally mispronouncing it. There's tonal stuff. I can never say Chinese things properly. There's always lots of really cool and interesting tonal stuff, but I do not know the proper pronunciation.
Well, how the dare name, you?
Yeah, I know. I'm the worst. The name does literally mean god dragon or spirit dragon. It's useful to remember that Chinese dragons, they're not really like the Western dragons, not like the Dravanian dragons that we've seen before. Usually they're more like snakes that have four legs. Most of them have these incredible power over water, over the weather, things like that. Chinese style dragons can fly, but usually they're not shown with wings. Their flying is not coming from flapping wings, but just kind of this mystical spiritual ability, much like their other powers. And a lot of references to dragons show up throughout Chinese culture, from the zodiac to their martial arts, to various festival dances. The first ruler of China was said to have taken on the form of a dragon and ascended to heaven, and dragons are often used as a symbol of imperial power. Shenlong dragons in particular, those spirit dragons, are supposed to have scales that are kind of like this azure color that would actually kind of gently change and shift colors, much like the sky. Although it's blue all the time, it's kind of this gently shifting blue. So they're kind of this reflection of the sky.
Ooh.
And they had a lot of direct control over the weather. When they were pleased, they could bring gentle winds, rain that would feed crops. But when they were angered or felt neglected, you would get like these huge storms, flooding, or droughts. So definitely something where people were like this kind of force of nature type dragon. So Shinryu in 14, as we've said, he was like kind of this culmination of Ilbert's plot to force the Alamigo question. Just prior to all the stuff we were talking about with the last patch, Ilbert leads the Alamegan resistance to capture Baelsar's wall, betrays him to be slaughtered en masse by Garlean reinforcements, and watching from high atop the wall, he brings forth the Eyes of Nidhogg, full of both ether and Nidhogg's fury, and he casts himself from atop the wall, plummeting to his death, to complete this really grim ritual, bringing forth this primal shaped out of all of this rage and despair. Like all of that ambient emotion, Ilbert's own frustrated dreams and goals for Alamigo, all turning into this kind of almost demonic dragon of vengeance.
So now, why was it Shinryu that was summoned? You know, a lot of people who were playing the game were guessing it was going to be something like Railgar or something related to that, something in the Alamegan, religions or something like that. But we end up getting this giant Asian, you know, named dragon like that. So what's the link?
Now, that's actually a really good question. I don't have anything that gives me a definitive answer here. So a lot of this is just going off of bits and pieces that we know about primal summoning and my own speculations on it. So, I mean, the first thing that you want to remember is that primals are creatures that are formed out of and shaped by belief. Mm-hmm. The beliefs of their summoners, how the summoner perceives the primal, not necessarily just who the summoner is or how the summoner thinks of themselves, but the belief the summoner has about the thing they are summoning ends up having this huge shaping effect on it. A couple examples I like to give. Ramu, those sylphs who summon him, perceive him as this wise old man who protects the forest, as this harsh but fair judge. So he doesn't look at all like a sylph. He doesn't go on a rampage to destroy the untempered sylphs or the Gridanians. The tempered sylphs might want that, but he's not just this direct expression of what they want. He is they see Ramu as wise and a good judge. And so when they call this primal, they get one that is wise, that is a good judge, even if that means that he's not necessarily doing the things that they want him to do. Another fun example on that, Garuda doesn't actually look like an Ixal. She looks like a beautiful woman with a lot of, like, kind of avian elements to her.
Now, isn't that one kind of halfway related to the Elegan, their Elegan backstory, how they were created? And
exactly. Good stories? Memory.
Yay, good, I remembered something.
There. Yes. This actually comes up in the lore encyclopedia as well. So the Ixal, of course, are descended from the artificially created Ixalian race, created by the ancient Allegans to be engineers, to work with all sorts of various other things. There was, in fact, a thing called the Garuda Airborne Division, which was a Allegan general that was commanding legions of Ixalian, the leader of which was a very harsh, beautiful woman. And so a lot of the image that they have of Garuda is almost certainly based on the memories of this particular Allegan general that have been passed down over time, changed and shaped by the all the various forces that do change oral traditions over time. But there's still this root of it that's saying, hey, this is what the person who commands us looks like, even though that's not the same as, hey, this is what, like, this is one of us. It's not like an ascended Ixal. It is the image they have of the thing that commands them, that protects them, though in the case of the Ixal, they have Garuda as a very bloodthirsty woman who is as likely to attack the Ixal for displeasing her as their enemies. Yeah. And that's probably in keeping with the image of that original general.
Yeah. But to answer Falcon's question in the chat, why do Ixals want their primals to have a great booty? Why wouldn't you? Right?
I mean, like, I don't think they have necessarily a position on that one way or the other. It's not necessarily okay. That they... You don't want God to have a booty.
I have a reasoning. I have a reasoning.
Oh, dear.
Okay, so they see us out in the world and they're like, damn... We see these flat-ass Makotes and Elizin and Hearers and everyone. They have no ass. Did they not turn up their butt sliders? Where is their butt slider?
We're going to summon a goddess that has the booty.
The booty. And that's what Iceheart was thinking. She was looking in the mirror one day and she's like, God damn, I have no ass. If I can change my form, I'ma have that ass.
So you're saying
there's a reason to turn yourself into a primal so you can skip having to go to the gym and just get that amazing booty.
Yeah,
those squats, I'm becoming a primal.
Aaron Theo exactly. Says, blame the calamity, we used to have booties.
Sarah. That's why all the primals have booties.
Yeah. Starting as this, we've got this thing where the primal is shaped a lot by the beliefs of what's summoning it. Now, the Alomegan resistance who died at Belsar's Wall, they didn't even know they were going to be summoning a primal. They did not have this conscious desire to call a primal. And in the end, like, they weren't specifically asking for Ralgar. They had these decades of oppression, this first real chance at freedom, at taking back Alamigo, was right in front of them. And then it gets torn away from them. And so it creates this, like, this despair, the fear, the hatred. This was actually part of Ilbert's plan, specifically to build up that hope and then crush it as thoroughly as possible to create that maelstrom of these, like, these emotions, this desire for vengeance to destroy the enemy. That was the thing he specifically wanted for his primal. Now, Ilbert steps in as the priest who is performing the summoning. And I kind of have to imagine that his vision of what he was bringing forth, that would be affected by the tools he had in hand. He knows that he's using these eyes of this dragon, this great dragon, known for this unstoppable anger, this desire for revenge. So I'm wondering if he envisioned the power that he was calling forth as a great dragon of vengeance, filling it with, like, his decades of seething resentment, his hatred of the hatred of the fallen Alamegans. And so I'm wondering if it took that shape in part because that was the image, like, Ilbert wasn't trying to call a specific deity at that point. He was just trying to kind of summon this force of vengeance and destruction. And I'm wondering if the nature of what he was using gave him this image of this great dragon of vengeance, that gave him the Nidhogg vision.
Right. So basically, Shinryu isn't one of Midgard Stormer's brood?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay, so or anything like that. He's not one of the one of the other great worms.
Nothing that I've seen yet seems to correspond with that. And one thing that I want to note is that Illbird never used the name Shinryu. Like, this was never something that came from that. We actually ended up with the name because a lot those Domin refugees were talking about the legends from their own land that talked of a dragon that was like this, mm-hmm. and that they gave the name Shinryu. Yeah. So we don't even know if what was summoned there is necessarily the same entity as the dragon from that legends. It just had that name slapped on it because, hey, this is the best name we've got for it.
Gotcha.
One other thing that I thought was kind of interesting is the way that Shinryu emerged from that cocoon of light. It is incredibly reminiscent of Bahamut bursting forth from Dalamud. Mm-hmm. And Illbird was talking about how he was calling a being who would eclipse Bahamut, both just like in terms of its grandeur and the destruction that it would wreak. People who survived the calamity, they probably had that image of Bahamut bursting forth from that moon, this creature that brings forth unparalleled destruction and ruin. And I'm wondering if that image was going through Ilbert's head as he was envisioning the primal he would summon. So I don't have direct evidence for this, but that's kind of my best guess as to how we got this primal dragon type thing that ends up sharing this name with something that Illbert could not have been reasonably expected to know about. I feel like that may just be like in the setting of Eorzea, kind of happenstance and coincidence.
I don't know. I like it. I think it's a good explanation.
Yeah. Talking a little more about Shinryu's history, outside of 14, Final Fantasy V was actually the first one that he showed up in. He was one of actually the first super bosses in the Final Fantasy series. These optional fights that are tougher than the final boss. If you can clear them, sometimes you get this amazing equipment, but if you can clear them, you don't need that amazing equipment. So it's kind of a bragging rights reward. And in 5, he was described in an ancient book as one of two terrible beasts that the game's 12 legendary weapons could not defeat. And so instead, ancient people sealed him away in the dimensional rift between worlds. You run into him as a monster in a box that is guarding the Ragnarok sword. Now, in that one, he always opens the encounter with a tidal wave attack and then proceeds to unleash a wide variety of elemental attacks. We did see that in 14, when Shinryu comes out, the first thing attack he does is calling up that gigantic wave. 5 also introduced Omega as a super weapon created by an ancient civilization, which was also sealed away in the rift due to its incredible power. Omega shows up in a lot of games as kind of this opposing force to Shinryu. It tends to use a lot of technologically themed attacks, its signature move being Wave Cannon. Now, I did see it was mentioned in the chat. Who mentioned that there? Let me scroll up a bit. Oh, yeah, Nicknar was talking about it. And actually, yes, Shinryu did show up in Final Fantasy XI as the final boss of the Abyssia? I hear so many arguments about how it gets pronounced. I just know that the pronunciation I like was officially not the one. And so at that point, I gave up trying to figure it out.
I've always heard it's Abyssia.
We'll go with Abyssia. So he was the final boss of the Abyssia series of mini expansions. So in Final Fantasy XI's narrative, at one point, the players prevent the resurrection of Promathia, this god of darkness whose return will mean the destruction of the world. Abyssia's storyline sends players to a parallel world where the parallel version of the players, of those heroes, they failed at that. Promathia was resurrected, absorbed a bunch of other people, including some major NPCs, took on their power, and became Shinryu, kind of this just like even a stronger divine personification of darkness that is returning the world to a null state. In that one, he uses a wide variety of attacks that are named after celestial phenomena, like dark matter, protostar, and supernova. And cool. Then the other game where he did have a major appearance was the Dissidia series, the one that's the fighting game between the various heroes and villains of the Final Fantasy series. And for that one, they expanded on this a bit more in the second game. The series focuses on this cycle of war between cosmos and chaos, sort of these forces of good versus evil or law versus order. The exact characterization can vary a little bit. But as part of this ancient pact, Shinryu maintains that conflict. When all of the warriors of one side or the other are defeated, he revives all of the fallen warriors of both sides. In exchange for doing that, he consumes their memories and he grows stronger and stronger. In the actual battles, he is a summon that can only be used by enemy characters, so the players never get to use Shinryu as a summon, and has a wide variety of effects, which are more powerful versions of the summons that players can use. Since it is a somewhat random, the player cannot easily predict the effect that Shinryu is going to have on the battle. So it's something that it's difficult to prepare for. When he shows up, you are going to have a bad time. There have been dragons named Shinryu in a number of the other games. Final Fantasy IX had a Nova dragon, which the Japanese naming for indicated that it was a derivation of Shinryu. Final Fantasy X had it as a fight you could unlock in the Monster Coliseum. A lot of the remakes of the earlier series games, so like the remake of Final Fantasy I or Final Fantasy IV, the After Years, a couple others like that, they often include Shinryu as a bonus boss. And Omega frequently is also included as a bonus boss. They often describe the two as being in opposition to each other.
Hmm. Very cool. Hmm. So we learned a little bit more about Shinryu, where he comes from in real life, and why the hell they picked him for this game.
Yep. I actually really like that they did have the opening tidal wave attack, even though that seemed like it might have been out of place elsewhere. Having it as a reference to Final Fantasy V, where he always opens with that tidal wave attack, I thought was a really nice touch.
Yeah, it's one thing that this game does well is it does place, you know, fan service to the players, so they, you know, can appreciate where the devs are coming from, because they're all fans of the series too.
Yeah. That little wink and nod, it's like, yeah, it's like this one, and we're going to give an attack that's reminiscent of that, just so you can have that, oh yeah, I remember that moment. The hard part is doing that while still keeping it believable in-game. That's a tricky balance to pull off. I think they manage it more often than not, though. Now, I don't know what this tells us about what to expect from him from the expansion. I mean, we saw Omega and Shinryu clash against each other. Both of them fall out of the sky, landing who knows where.
Yeah.
And I mean, so he is this primal that was summoned. I'm not quite sure what's going to be maintaining his existence at this point. Is it something where he's going to fade away? Is it something like the Binding Coil where there's going to be some other force that sustains his existence that we have to deal with? I am not quite sure what to expect. Omega is a little bit of an easier case in that we know that the machine does not stop existing just because people don't believe in it anymore. So that one's definitely going to be an issue. And we've already been told that we're going to have the Dimensional Rift raid dungeon series where we're going to be interacting with Omega. I'm not sure if we're necessarily going to be fighting it directly or how that's going to work, though.
And are we going to be working Shinryu into that? Is it possible Shinryu is going to squeeze into the Return to Ivalice? Is it going to be its own thing?
Yep. I mean, Omega has been cast as a generalized Allegan primal hunting weapon, much like Ultima weapon. So even if it's not dealing directly with Shinryu, there still can be plenty of interesting threats that it has to deal with.
Yeah, we'll have to see what ends up happening with the whole thing. So it gives them some leeway to play with those two, large bosses, but and something for us to look forward to.
The other thing I wonder about is that, like, the Band of Time or the Dimensional Rift or however it's been referred to is often in a lot of the series, it's been this kind of this place that ancient civilizations throw their super dangerous nuclear waste equivalents into. So I'm kind of wondering what the various past civilizations of Eorzea might have been shunting into there.
Yeah, Stun Gaming in the chat also mentioned the possibility that it could be 4.2 Shinryu Bend of Time.
Hmm.
So we may deal with just Omega for the first phase. We may get Shinryu for the second phase. We may get another Mega Boss in the third phase.
Who or knows possibly something are. Dealing with the clash between the two of them.
Who knows? I mean, there are a lot of different possibilities it could be. It could be something totally different.
Huh, that could actually be an interesting style, like a raid where you have these two giant things clashing and your main goal is actually to try to survive it or to try to protect various things from it. I wonder if that would work as a raid.
Well, you suggested to him and let's find out.
I'm sure they've got a huge plan for that already, but I might as well toss the idea that that kind of thing could be fun.
Maybe in 5.0.
Oh, it's the return of Hamlet defense, except instead of like random beast men, it's giant world-ending primals. As long as I get to hang in the back rows and cook stuff, and all of a sudden this buffs all of the NPCs.
Yeah, bring in all your crafters to raid.
Dude, nice. Hamlet defense with crafters was kind of amazing.
Well, I mean, that's something that we've actually been asking them to bring back, something along those lines to make crafters and gatherers relevant. I mean, aside from, you know, just making gear and repairing stuff.
Oh, man, something where you have like actively contributing to like a siege defense where you're like maintaining siege engines or walls or things like that. That could be interesting.
Or helping to build them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that could be really cool. Thank you so much for that, Sarah. I know you've been working really hard on some other things as well, which we'll talk about towards the end of the show. Amazingly, guys, this is one of our shortest episodes ever.
Surprisingly.
But
Can we blame Chili?
Yeah, let's blame Chili.
Okay, perfect.
Jeez, Chili. Way God to do whatever it is you did.
Yeah, but I'm okay with that because we do have something special brewing up. Yeah. Like I said, we'll talk about that in just a second.
This is just kind of a quieter week. We are kind of in that pre-expansion lull. Mm-hmm. So on a certain level, there's just not as much to talk about right now.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, we expanded it as much as we could, I think. But like I said, we've got a lot of stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks. We'll have a live letter to talk about in the next show and some other stuff. But we do have some emails and comments to discuss. So thank you. Thank you, everybody who wrote to us. Jupiter Otome at Twitter writes, I'm enjoying y'all's podcast. I'm going in chronological order and I'm on episode 11. Keep up the awesome. So thank you so much for listening. And we hope that you're able to catch up on that road trip you're going on and hope you are able to get caught up and hear us. Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, that's actually kind of interesting when you listen to a whole bunch of the earlier episodes in a row and you get to hear the evolution of their style.
Yeah, and the fact that they're still on 11. Because things didn't change until 13.
So much to go.
That's when we had Callie on the show, and boy, did things change. Cherry Lube, anyone? In fact, I think I messaged that to them as a response on Twitter. also, Linalia left us a comment on the last episode on the website. If you really want to attract all the lore people, here's what you do. You flip through the lore book and you find the most weird and obscure food item it mentions. Hang that on a stick. When they all gather around it and start to talk about it, that's when you pull the lever to trap them in a cage. And that's pretty funny.
I have to argue about this because I don't think it's the weird food items. Something that's a common food item, but maybe slightly unusual, but that they were eating a lot. That's where you get a lot of the really interesting stuff about. This is where it says something about the culture. Like, we could do some culinary anthropology here if you really want.
Maybe.
I'm proving her point, aren't I?
Yes, you are. And actually, it worked. Because, here's our big announcement, guys. One second.
Klaus is getting croaky.
Yeah, I was getting croaky. I had to clear my throat. Sorry. Because we are extremely happy to announce that the next show will be a lore spectacular. So for all you guys who really love the lore, you do not want to miss this one. We will not only have our own amazing lorebrarian, Sarah, we will also be joined again by Ethis Asher. And we were able to get the lore master from Gamerscape, Anonymous. So we are going to have three of the community's biggest lore minds together on one show.
I mean, I'm guessing pretty much we're just gonna start like chatting at each other, and at some point you two will be like, we're still here, and we'll be like, that's nice, go get us some coffee.
We'll be like, guys, the lore, hello.
People might be asking how this happened.
Oh god, how did this happen, Luna?
So it was 2 weeks ago that I was running Weeping City, and I'm kind of just looking around, and I'm looking through the names in my party, and I see someone named Anonymous. I'm like, wait, that Anonymous? Gamerscape Anonymous? And so I tried to talk to him. I'm like, hey, we follow each other on Twitter, and we're mutuals on Twitter, and we've had Fusion on the thing that we do, the Phoenix Zone Radio. And he didn't talk to me, so I was sad. And so Klaus was like, what? And yeah, so it just kind of like snowballed from there. Yeah.
So what ended up happening?
You should have stopped healing him. That'd learn him.
But then we wouldn't have gotten this whole thing. So
he didn't die, though, is the thing. So he was on Summoner. He was okay.
Oh, okay.
So Luna
made a handle mechanics anonymous.
So Luna's telling me what happened. And, well, you know, I'm on the Final Fantasy community content creators Discord group with Anonymous and Fusion on there as well. And I'm like, so, Anonymous, I hear you've been ignoring my co-hosts. He's like, what?
Yeah, Gauntlet thrown down.
probably about this time, I ended up getting a screenshot of me and him in the raid together. I'm like, hey, we were raiding together. Hi.
And he probably just missed it in the battle spam.
He did. That's exactly what happened.
he was too busy, doing my deeps. He was paying attention to my deeps. Totally was engrossed in that. Actually, no, I think he said it was half-assing and doing something else, and just wasn't paying attention to chat.
Yeah, pretty much.
So sounds like
he, okay, basically, he never played Summoner. He's a scholar main, so he was getting used to the rotation, I guess, for Summoner.
I'm gonna have to go back and look at it. But anyway,
I don't know. But
he didn't like a month.
He felt bad about it. And anyway, Luna came up with this wonderful idea that the only way that she's gonna forgive him is if he comes on the show and talks about the mock, I believe.
What do you call that? What do you call that raid entirely? And it's
Shadows of Mock.
Shadows of Mock.
Yep. So basically, I'm like, you know. Whose idea was it to bring Ethis in on this?
Actually, I think that was mine. I was like, yeah. You know what? Let's just make it.
Let's grab Ethis. Let's kidnap Ethis.
Yep.
And basically, I'm like, I want to learn about the history of the Shadows of Mock. To get my forgiveness, you're going to tell me all about the Shadows of Mock.
But we've now expanded that because we got Ethis and Sayre. We're going to talk about the entire fifth astral era.
Also small amounts of the fourth and fifth umbral. They're important as framing devices, people.
Yes, but we're going to be talking about not only Mach, but Amdapur and Nim. So
and also a whole bunch of city-states that kind of faded from history, which is really a little bit weird, but also not weird. I'm saying too much again.
No, it's awesome. I'm excited for this.
Well, I mean, I feel like I need to save this for next show.
But what's cool is we've been actually talking about this idea since FanFest. You know, the idea of getting all of the librarians together, especially when the lore book was announced, and having all this new stuff to discuss and actually get some information on, you know, things that we didn't have much information to go on, like the fifth astral era. So
to interrupt you just a little bit, Brogram in the Twitch chat has a question. When they say community, are these fans who make the lore, are they part of the SE, or do they have a link to SE that let them talk about the lore?
That's a good question.
It's kind of closest to the last one. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've ever seen a lot of his postings on the official forums, for instance, Anonymous didn't have, he's not like working for them. He's not like directly saying, okay, I will get this information. It's more like he brings together a whole bunch of stuff and say, hey, this is an interesting pattern I've noticed. This thing is suggestive of that. The work that he does is actually fairly similar to what an actual historian does in trying to understand history,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, hey, you've got bits and pieces of stuff. What can you say? Like, what understanding can you make of this? What are reasonable guesses? What are unreasonable guesses? Like a lot of history work that historians do, it is kind of this interesting, complex, educated guesswork. I feel like that's still oversimplifying it, but it's taking this stuff, trying to figure out the context to fit it into, trying to figure out, how might this have been misunderstood? What other details do we have? It's putting together this really, really complex puzzle, except instead of puzzle pieces, it's people.
Mm-hmm. Basically what it is, Anonymous works for Gamer Escape. He works with Fusion X on that website, and he does the lore for their Aetherite Radio podcast. Yeah. And he also is a huge, huge fan of the game and just loves lore that much that he takes his time to do things like this. And because of their ties, Gamer Escape has a lot of ties with Square Enix, and they get some access to people like Koji Fox to confirm or refute the theories that they come up with.
Yeah, he has a little bit of an easier time at getting like official yay or nay on his theorizing.
Yep. Now, Ethis, he is a Twitch streamer that also just loves the lore of the game and uses his time to find out these things about it, digs deep into it, similar to the way Sarah does it. You know, Sarah is an actual librarian, and that's what he does, and he just takes the two loves that he has, and we get our lorebrarian.
Research skills, yo.
Yo. So I'm really, really looking forward to getting all three of these minds together in one show. And like I said, I hope that you guys are all going to come join us. And I hope that the world does not end because of it.
Quick bonus comment for that. If you are interested in this type of thing, one of the best things that you can study or try to get an understanding of is world religions and mythologies. Because a lot of it is like kind of this storytelling, like a lot of these broad patterns, a lot of the ways that, especially because Eorzea is this setting that's supposed to be about like all these gods and these myths. So having understanding of a lot of the famous ones and a lot of the patterns that they tend to follow, it gives you a really useful framework for fitting a lot of this.
Yep.
I mean, if you want to start delving into this type of thing on your own, just getting a good understanding of mythology and storytelling in general is something that's really, really valuable for that.
Definitely. So please look forward to that. Mic drop. All right. So we've reached the end of our show. If you're new to us, thank you so much. If you're new to the stream, go ahead and hit the little follow button below. It'll let you know when we go live next. If you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or watching us on YouTube, make sure to like, subscribe, or follow us there. And leave a comment or a rating as well to let people help find our show. It helps to really grow our show in the community, and it allows us to get more followers. So it's one of those big vicious circles, but we got to get it started somehow. So we appreciate everybody who stops by, and thank you so much for your support. If you're really digging the show, please consider becoming a patron. Our patron page is at patreon.com/phoenixonradio, and all of the proceeds from that go towards growing the show, covering hosting costs, and allows us to do fun things like giveaways, supporter-only incentives, and things like that. So, like I said, if you're interested in that, that'd be patreon.com/phoenixonradio. If you want to get a hold of us, have any questions or anything like that, you can email us podcast@phoenixdownradio.com. Our website is www.phoenixdownradio.com, where we will have all of our past episodes. And as soon as this one is up and ready, we'll have that out there as well. You can hit us up on Twitter @PHXDNRadio. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/phoenixdownradio. And of course, we are always live on Twitch, twitch.tv/phoenixdownradio. It's not only the podcast every other week. We also, Luna and I have been doing a lot more streaming. So stop by and hang out with us as we're doing roulettes, or maybe we'll be playing a different game. So check it out.
Yeah.
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 Woo.
Shout outs. Now, this is where the time that I would have Chili go first, because he's got about 3,000 of them, but he unfortunately had to do a free company meeting that was more important than us. So. But no, he got to be an officer, so congrats to Chili to becoming an officer on your free company on Ultros. Luna, shout outs. How to get a hold of you?
Shout out. So, man, I had one set up. I don't remember it anymore. Shout out to Mother Nature for providing me with some tasty, tasty morels.
Mm.
Right? Mm. Yeah. Other than that, shout
because
out
Nacho's
to
Nacho's still best. Chili Kappa.
Give a shout out to our buddies over at Maelstrom Radio. They've been have some pretty funny interaction and just makes me chuckle. So thank you, Flatus. Thank you, Shin. If you want to give me a follow over on Twitter, I was almost going to say Twitch, but I am on here. You can follow Phoenix Down Radio, and I'll be streaming every now and then. I try to do it at least 2 or 3 times a week. But yeah, if you want to follow me over on Twitch, not freaking Twitch, Luna. God damn it. If you want to follow me over on the Twitter, it is Luna_Vox. I'm also on Tumblr. If you want to check that out, I post a lot of random shit that no one really cares about, but it's LunaVox, FFXIV, all one word, no spaces. It's all the way through there. Other than that, yeah, that's pretty much what I have going down.
All right, Sarah.
All right. I'm not sure about shoutouts at the moment. I've just been kind of not doing a whole lot the last week or two. Took on a lot of extra library shifts, playing Persona 5.
Basically, what Sarah's trying to say is that he hates you all.
Well, hate is really too strong a word. It's more like I'm kind of apathetic towards you guys. Wait, what? No, you guys are great. I love you. I am looking forward to like getting back more into the swing of things. Also found out that I thought it was just allergies, but it turned out that some of my allergy symptoms were an actual cold. That was kind of awkward.
Ew.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been kind of a low energy past couple of weeks. I kind of want to get back into it and at least finish off my anima weapon before Stormblood starts up, though. So I'm looking forward to seeing people around a bit more. But shout outs to everyone listening. You still keep listening even when I'm rambling and I don't 100% understand why, but I do appreciate it. thank you for coming.
How can they get a hold of you on the Twitters?
So on Twitter, it's FFXIVSEYRR. I mostly post random things about cooking or about whatever game I happen to be playing. It's not super interesting, but some people appear to like it. I don't know.
There's always a market for everything.
It's the social medias, the millennials with their Facebooks and their not buying enough houses.
Damn kids, get off my lawn.
And purchase another lawn so that the value of my lawn is maintained. Yeah. I don't understand the whole thing. I have political rants about this. I mostly keep the political rants off of Twitter, though. No one needs to hear that.
Yeah, they go on his Facebook.
Only occasionally.
Occasionally being every day, then yes.
Also, if you have questions about lore stuff, whether it's like broad open questions, like tell me all about the second astral era. Spoiler alert, there's not much. A lot of historical records are lost. But it can be big, broad, open questions like that. Or it can be like tiny little things about this random NPC or about an interesting word that was used in a cutscene that you don't quite understand what it means. Send me your lore questions. I like answering stuff. I like responding to the stuff that people are actually super interested in.
Yeah, I do it all the time.
Mm-hmm. No, yes. She does. It's really great. I love it.
Keeps him busy when he's bored at the reference desk.
Well, half the time he doesn't know what to talk about for lore. I'm like, Sarah, I want to know about this. And he's like, I got lore for the week.
Woohoo! All right. And I want to shout out to everybody watching us live here at Twitch, as well as everybody listening out on the podcast. We really do appreciate you checking us out and sticking with us. We were the little guys that started out, and we've actually gotten quite a following, so thank you. We really do appreciate that. I mean, the fact that we're now Twitch affiliates says a lot.
Complete with naked dancers and corpses on our tables.
Yes. Hell yeah.
I mean, that's what happens when you got, you know,
we're spend surrounded all the money by beautiful women, naked au ras, and french fries.
Yes.
So are we supposed to be doing cocaine off the Lalafell? I feel like that's how this works.
No, that's why we have the beautiful women around us there. God, don't you know?
The Lalafell did too much.
On the table.
We use the Lalafell to make the lines? I don't know.
I feel like that's going to be awkward.
It's not awkward if you make it if you don't make it awkward. Now it's going to be awkward, Sarah.
Folks, that's not God. Where what your cheers go doing? For. The cheers do not go for this. So, no. It's not for the hookers and blow. So.
Oh. For the coke that you get in game.
Yes, for all that coke. No.
Anyone who has worked on a free company airship knows all about your coke habits. Oh my God, we went through so much coke.
Anyway.
So much coke.
If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at @phxdn_Klaus, KLAUSS. It's mostly my running, I think, is 90% of it.
But, yeah.
or when I decide to put stickers on my car or do other random stupid shit.
You bake every once in a blue moon, too.
I used to post pictures of the bread that I made, but it's like, I just make the same bread every week. It's like, that's getting boring. But anyway, like I said, I like to interact with the rest of the community. I want to shout out to the other podcasts, Maelstrom Radio, She Heals, I Tank, Gather Together, Limit Break Radio, Aetherite Radio, and especially now to Fusion for he's continuing to do the Final Fantasy 14 Creators Roundup. It's a great way that you can see all of the week's podcasts and lore creation and just random stuff that people make from the community in one location. So we usually will retweet that as well. So
yeah.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So I have to say one little note before we end the show. Sarah, I was reading through your lore segment and the very first sentence, I'm like, Shinryu is the Japanese name for schlong. I'm like, what?
No,
it's schlong.
There's schlong. More letters in it.
Shillong.
Well, I had long.
It is a giant writhing snake that goes through the sky and makes rain come down upon you.
Dicks, 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 dicks.
I mean, any halfway competent bard or storyteller is going to work in some penis jokes because, like, that's how you keep your audience.
Dicks, 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 dicks.
Anytime there's a penis joke in some ancient mythical thing like that, it's probably intentional.
Why are you putting penises in ancient mythical things? That's what Zeus used to do.
It's the ancient Chinese secret.
Like that's like people of like thousands of years ago, they liked dick jokes too.
That's the special Szechuan sauce. And with that, we're Phoenix Down Radio. Good night, everybody.
For the missing chili, for Sarah Timono, for Luna Vox, I am Klaus Nightbringer, wishing I hadn't brought these guys into this, but wishing everybody a wonderful evening. Make sure to tune in 2 weeks for our lore special. Take care.
Phoenix Down Radio is a production of PhoenixDownRadio.com and Illusion Productions. Final Fantasy XIV and Eorzea are trademarks of Square Enix. In-game content for Phoenix Down Radio is a copyright of Square Enix. Open to music for Phoenix Down Radio is provided by Guilty Gear Rocky. Check out the Metal Chocobo theme cover and many other music videos at youtube.com/GuiltyGearRocky. Closing music for this episode is provided by GuitarWanker90. Please check out their full version of Matoya's Cave and other rock video game covers at youtube.com/GuitarWanker90. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are those of Phoenix Down Radio and its hosts and do not reflect the views of Square Enix.